Welcome back to the Banking on Digital Growth podcast. My name is James Robert Lay, founder and CEO here at the Digital Growth Institute, where we are on a mission to help financial brands stop losing loans and deposits. And today's episode is part of the Digital Leadership Series. But first, before we get into today's discussion, if you are on a marketing, sales, or leadership team at a financial brand, I want to invite you to join over 300 other growth-minded leaders who are committed to learning, connecting, and growing together. That's because you can become a member of the digital growth community in less than 60 seconds when you visit www.digitalgrowth.com/membership. Now, joining me for today's conversation is Audrey Cannata, operations lead here at the Digital Growth Institute. And today we are going to continue our conversation to help you answer the question of who is on your team. Team is an acronym for time, energy, attention, and money. And each one of those points, we need to ask a very specific question. We've talked about, Audrey, already. We've talked about how you're investing your time, how you're spending your energy. Today, what are we going to focus on?
Your attention.
And what's the way that we should frame this? What are you paying attention,
to?
And I think it's interesting when we think about this, time, energy, attention, those are... How are you investing? How are you spending? What are you paying attention to? It's all through the perspective of money. So in essence, time, energy, and attention could be thought of as currencies. But before we get too far there, what is good in your world right now? Personally, professionally, it is your pick to get started on a positive note.
Yeah. So I just hit a fun milestone with F45, which is my gym. Just finished or came up on my third year. Wow. Being there. I started back in March of 2021. Coming out of 2020, feeling a little sluggish, needed to join a community, a gym. And I tell you what, it's just been such a wonderful investment, since we're using currency. It's been such an investment of my time, of my money. It's wild to think. I think I've hit coming up on 700 classes, and it's just become one of those like mindless, this is what I do. And it's been, I'll tell you, it's been such an amazing, life changing, as dramatic as that sounds. It really has impacted my life for the better in so many different ways. It's the best way to start my morning.
But it really is in line with today's conversation about what you're paying attention to, because as Epictetus the Stoic taught, you become what you give your attention to. And I think that really, it begs the question for those watching and listening, what are you paying attention to right now? Because that is really going to impact how you spend your energy and how you invest your time. And if I think about what you're sharing here, 3 years, 700 classes, well, that's a lot of attention that you've given to, that you've paid to focus on your physical health, your physical well-being, that has impacted mental health, mental well-being, that has impacted relational well-being. I mean, all of these, it's all now interconnected. Why must we be more mindful of what we pay attention to as we move further into the age of AI, particularly as digital leaders?
Gosh, I really just think it comes down to the subconscious. And what's happening subconsciously to the things that we're watching, we're reading, we're hearing, and how that really does influence our thinking and our decisions. I can look back on different periods of my life and, reflect and think, wow, like, I think that's why I was, behaving that way, or that's why I thought these certain things. Like, so much of it was tied to what I was paying attention to, and, compare that to where I am now and just the different mental space that I'm in. But I think it really boils down to the subconscious.
Well, when you start getting headlines like, Sam Altman from ChatGPT saying it was like 90-95% of marketing activities can be replaced by artificial intelligence within the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
I think we have to be mindful of how we perceive even just those headlines. And in a world where attention spans run short and, you know,
no one's going to read all the way through.
Exactly. You see the headline that is going to impact, has the potential to impact, unless you have a higher level of awareness, how you're perceiving the world around you, but also how you're perceiving the future. And one of the things that we've talked about in a previous episode is the idea of the future growth index, mm-hmm. because what you pay attention to is directly going to impact your perception of the future. And as a leader, your perception of the future is directly going to impact how you make decisions now in the present moment to create or co-create the future together with those on your team. Yeah.
Like coming from a place of fear, scarcity. Absolutely.
And I know you've been reading a book, The Psychology of Money.
Yes.
And the reason I want to bring this up is because when we think about what we're paying attention to, the idea of the transformation of work, bit of a hot topic. In fact, very recently had a coaching call with a financial brand leader who's on a senior leadership team. And one of the things that she shared was the board of directors is now wanting the executive team to start bringing people back into the office. Well, that is creating some conflict and tension across the organization, and specifically on her team. She's already had two team members saying that if they have to come in more than 3 days a week, they're going to be gone. And you can say, well, if you want a job, then you're going to have to come into the office. And then, but on the flip side, you see it's almost like an empowered employee. They have choice. They have options more than ever before. So it's a matter of perception. It's like, are you viewing the world to your point? Are you viewing the world through a lens of abundance? Or are you viewing the world through a lens of scarcity? And how much
begs the question, why?
Yes. Like, expand upon that.
Like what's the root reason for wanting to come into the office? Like, I think that's what we really need to uncover and get to the bottom of, because, you know, for you and I, we love getting together in person, and we do several times a month, but there's a reason we do that, mm-hmm. because of the physical energy we exchange, you and I have when sitting in a room together. And all of the, and those days are all like future focused days where we're really moving the ball forward. So we have a purpose for that. I live an hour away. It's worth that hour drive for me there and back, you know, several times a month to make that progress moving forward. But are you asking your employees to come in the office because you want to keep an eye on them? Because there's not a lot of trust that they're getting their jobs done remotely? Is it, you know, I guess for me, that's what I want to know is why.
Well, then that's a fantastic point too you make about energy, which we just had the conversation on a previous podcast about, and it didn't even click on me at the time, of the value of in-person connection. And I think I want to be very clear. I am not saying 100% remote is the way to go, but I'm no longer in the camp of you have to be 100% in the office in person either. I would say my current, and I always reserve the right to change my mind and change my opinion based upon new data, but really this idea of a hybrid-like environment, because the environment will directly impact energy, whether that's deep work focus, like we were talking about in the previous one, or in this particular case too, coming in together, what you're paying attention to.
Yeah. And it's also where do you work best? You know, some people want to have the option to go in the office so they can, you know, have that focus and they're not having the distractions at home. And absolutely. And then there's some people who, like for me, it would be a struggle for me to come into the office every single day. It would take a toll on me time, energy, attention to make that commute. And so having the hybrid does work best for sure. And I think that's what we have to look at. What is the best outcome? And then let's work backwards.
But this is where I'm going to loop in the psychology of money and something that you shared with me. It's this idea of how we think about work and the work that we do. It's something that I have written about in Banking on Change. I've been speaking about this. There are four seasons that lead to exponential growth when one perceives that they're growing personally and professionally at the same exact time. There's a season for learning. There's a season for thinking, for doing, and then ultimately for reviewing, to repeat the process, to review. You learn through the experience, to think about how you can do even better through the next iteration. Take us back to the 1800s. What was the perception of work back then? And how does that compare and contrast with where we're at today as we move further into the age of AI?
Yeah, I found this very, very interesting just to kind of really sit and think about and look at the numbers. But, you know, back then, most of the work was labor. And so it wasn't, and let me get through this before judging what I'm about to say, but it's not about, you know, your thinking. It's about your doing. It is, you know, physical, tangible, you know, agriculture, crafts, manufacturing. So your job only existed at your job. There was nothing really for you to do when you got home. It was check in, check out. Whereas now that is flipped. And I have some data here that says 38% of jobs are classified as managers, officials, and professionals. These are decision-making jobs. The other 41% are service jobs that rely on your thoughts. And so if we're constantly working in our heads, your heads aren't going anywhere. Your head's with you 24/7. So now we have this flip from, and even now, so, you know, you may have like mechanics, you know, they're going to go to work. They're going to work all day. When they punch out, they're done. But if you've got someone in marketing creating a marketing campaign, that's their mind. That's their thinking. That's not going to shut off. So now instead of the 6, 7, 8 hours you're working, you know, at work during the day, you're going home, your mind's still on, you're cooking dinner, you're putting your kids to bed, you know, you're driving around and your brain's still working on that marketing campaign in your mind, or it could be. So there's just this really weird, interesting bleeding over between, you know, so much of that physical work before and now the mental load. And I think that's why it's even more important to create this awareness so that we are able to prevent like that burnout and protect that mental energy, which ties back to our last conversation. I know.
Well, and I think that's the whole point, is why we broke this idea of asking the question, who's on your team, into these four distinct conversations, because there's a lot to unpack in each one of them. But the heart of the matter is they are really all interconnected here. And when you think about what you do versus what you think.
Yeah.
It is my prediction, particularly even if you are in a quote unquote thinking like role today, that AI has the potential to go in and disrupt the doing. I've really been encouraging people to begin to detach from what you do, to invest more into reviewing what has been done, to be a lifelong learner through experience or through continued education, so that you can create even more value through your thinking and through your thoughts. Although execution is going to be critically important, it's just the way we execute could be exponentially transformed. And you're already seeing, and I know we're going to have a podcast conversation about this, of how what you do yourself specifically has transformed since November 30th, 2022 with the launch of ChatGPT.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy for many of us. And I'm one of those people where I've typically attached my success or how well I'm doing to what I'm doing. What is my output? What am I creating? What am I getting done? And so for me, that's been my measure of, what did I get done today? What did I do today? Amazing. I killed it. how do you measure though your thinking? How do you measure your thoughts? How do we measure the time that I've spent now that I'm not doing some of that because of ChatGPT? Thank you. I have spent more time thinking and learning and growing. That's hard to measure. That's not tangible. And so then I think we get in this weird, uncomfortable, like, how do I prove my value when it's, I'm not necessarily doing, but look at all this thinking that I'm doing.
But a lot of this, coming back to what you shared from the psychology of money, thinking about work and labor, rooted in a model from the late 1800s, early 1900s. That was the Industrial Revolution. Yep. And the output was tangible. But now, at least for those listening to this podcast and watching this podcast, the majority of what you do, your output is intangible. You know, you might, for example, let's say you're in marketing, you might have output be video. Well, guess what? How does AI now interface with that output? On the flip side of the spectrum, I do see the potential for there to be a rise in, we'll call it just the blue collar world, those working in the physical, tangible world of, we'll say, auto mechanics or plumbers, HVAC. Maybe more AI proof jobs. I don't know how all this is going to shape out to be. These are the things that I ponder and I think about. It's like, will we see a swing back into the trades, for example? Yeah. And what would that do at a macro cultural level, which would then trickle down into financial services? Yeah. Regardless, though, operating today in 2024, going to 2025, even 2030, with a model that was established in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it's no longer applicable, but B, I don't think it's sustainable. And that's where you're getting a lot of burnout, particularly at a professional level. But the other thing too, is not only thinking about this through the way that we perceive work, but also education. Because today's educational model is still rooted in that late 1800s, early 1900s worldview, where it was preparing the kids of the day to then go work in the factories of back then being tomorrow. And once again, it's a different time. It's a different way about thinking about the world. And why is thinking so important? Here, it comes back to what Jim Rohn has talked about. We have to stand guard at the door of your mind. This is why,
love that.
Why being mindful, why questioning what you're paying attention to, because if the value that we're going to continue to create going forward in the age of AI is going to be less about what we do, but more of how we think, are you planting good seeds that will go off and bear fruit with your thoughts? Or are you planting weeds right now that are going to choke the fruit of your future based upon what you're paying attention to today?
Yeah, I think, and you talked about education, and I can say that when I was teaching, I did see there was a shift in the curriculum about halfway through where we did start to integrate a lot of critical thinking about your thinking. And I think that might be where we see this disconnect, especially with like, what are you paying attention to? And you mentioned the news headline from Sam Altman, you know, you're going to see that. And are you reading that and taking that as just the headline and maybe viewing it negatively, you know, with a little bit of fear tied to it? Are you taking the time to read the article and like dig in and think about what this really means and critically think about it? And I think that's where we're going to see that shift moving forward with all the new distraction coming out, all the, you know, the age of AI, Jim Rohn's quote, you know, stand guard at the door of your mind. You got to be able to take that information in, synthesize it yourself, process it yourself, and really look at it more objectively Otherwise, and I've seen this, especially, we kind of switch gears here, but in the world of politics, this has become huge. And I have seen, I think we all have seen how this can really divide. I mean, it's very divisive. And especially if we're looking at headlines alone and not doing our own thinking, it's just going to be interesting going forward. I think, like you said, there's going to be these two different, this is our last conversation, but you're going to have those two different kinds of people, you know, the batteries included, the batteries not included.
Add to that deep fakes, whether that be voice, video, pictures, all of the above, the ability to critically think. And I'm glad you touched on this through your lens as an educator. One of the things that I wrote about in Banking on Change, there was a report that came out called The State of Critical Thinking, and that found that fewer than one out of every 10 educators teach critical thinking. And I bring that up because if we think about a digital leader today, A, are we giving ourselves space and time to critically think? B, do we even know how to critically think anymore?
That.
Let's pause on that. Why that?
I mean, do we know how to critically think? I mean, it is a skill. I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't know, being able to ask why and question things, objectively, you and I, cause we're a very similar community where this is kind of how we think, but you know, I know I've got people in my life and family who I don't know that that's something that they do naturally.
But it comes back to what are you paying attention to? Because
what are you paying attention to?
If we're being very intentional with our attention and surrounding ourselves with people who aren't afraid to ask questions. And I'll be the very first one to say, I don't know at all. So I'm naturally going to ask questions. Okay. I'm naturally going to question whatever maybe a narrative is, hoping that I'm going to learn something new from someone who has a different perspective than I do. That's a very, but two, if you think about our perspectives, as we've talked about on this podcast, being informed from a Stoic lens, idea of thought and how the Stoics taught, that was a public square format. And when you consider the works of Alvin Toffler, one of the things he wrote back in the 1970s, he said, the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write. It'll be those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. And there goes this idea of the need for critical thinking. So come back to the questions. Are you giving yourself space and time as a digital leader to think? Because thinking takes time. Thinking is an investment of time. You have to stop doing something to create time to think. Do you even know how, do you have the mental models and the frameworks that can guide that type of critical thinking? And then are you doing that for your team and then bringing all of that together to have shared thinking time to then do even better going forward into the future? Now, coming back to the educational perspective, I don't, in Texas, we have the STAR test. And I don't know why. Yeah, it is coming up. And I don't know why I've never thought about this. What was the test that we took back in the day?
TOS and TAX.
TOS is what it was. That's what I'm thinking. I vividly...
TAX is the state of academic standards?
I believe so. I vividly remember, though, as a kid, and I don't know. You would know better than I do. I vividly remember as a kid, like being like third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, whatever that was, we had to do, it was almost like the section was something about critical thinking. Like you had a section that you had to write and take a point of view and defend that point of view. And I remember that was like, for me, I actually enjoyed that part of the test.
So funny, because not me.
Really?
No, I wanted to be able to go and underline the answer in the passage, so I knew without 100% certainty that was the right answer. When I had to start going off on my own, but again, this probably shows a lot. I wouldn't say that I was, you know, a very good critical thinker as a child. I was a very like math was my, it's right or wrong. Like I either got it right or I got it wrong. It wasn't until I became a teacher that I really understood and I really empathized with my students that this was not an easy thing I was asking them to do. It's to take, you know, a question, use the text as evidence, but then come up with your own reasoning and your own connections. That's not natural for these students to be able to do. And if we're not teaching that at a young age, well, you know, we're going to end up with adults who take news articles and headlines and they take it for face value and they just, yep, they read it. That's fact. And they move right along instead of stopping, having their own, you know, thoughts, their own questions and using that to then form their own ideas and opinions.
It's so fascinating to get your personal perspective looking backwards on that, because I don't know, like I always enjoyed, even take math, you know, like there were multiple ways to solve a problem. And
oh yeah,
you
had to be one of those that came up with your own way, not the way the teacher told you.
Exactly. And it worked, and it's like we all arrived at the same conclusion, but
right.
But I can think back as a student that would create some conflict. I want to stay on this point of critical thinking and then get back to the idea of what you're paying attention to, because that will directly influence your thoughts, and which will then influence how you spend your energy and then how you invest your time. One of the things I included in Banking on Change came from a study. It was conducted by the Reboot Foundation, and it found that 80% of respondents say that young people lack the ability to engage in critical thinking, while only 29% of respondents say that they definitively studied critical thinking in school themselves. Let's put that another way. 8 out of 10 young people, we probably need to provide some more clarity into what quote unquote young people are in regards to the study. But 29% say that they definitively studied critical thinking in school. Reframe that. 70% are unsure if they've studied critical thinking themselves. And in this age of AI, at an organizational level, where thought becomes a valuable asset, becomes a valuable activity, what can be done to help individuals, teams, and organizations be more mindful of their thoughts, i.e. what you're paying attention to?
That's a good question. I think it really comes down to your culture and kind of setting a tone for, and I don't mean to sound like woo-woo again, but like positivity. What are the positive things happening versus it's so easy to feed into negativity. I mean, I've been in organizations where it's just nonstop chatter and one person says something and then it ignites just like a flame of frustration. And it's just so toxic and easy for that to happen. And so I know we talked about this many times, but it's just taking a moment every day or every week to connect with your team and what's going good, what's going well. If there's a situation that we're frustrated with, let's discuss it. Why is this happening? Can we change it? Can we not change it? If we can't change it, we spend energy focusing on what's out of our control. versus what's in our control, especially in the workplace. We were talking earlier about commuting and some team members being frustrated that they now have to come into the office, and totally understand the frustration. But are we have a culture of, okay, are we going to talk about it and discuss it and have a solution? Or are we just going to, you know, be upset about it and complain about it, but it's not going to change?
But to your point about positivity and why that could come off as some as quote unquote woo-woo. It's all of this is now getting backed up by science, and it's not even science. Like, this is going back. These are ancient truths that have withstood the test of time. I mean, I mentioned earlier, Epictetus, you become what you give your attention to. Mm-hmm. And so if you're giving your attention to quote unquote negative things, you're going to become a negative person.
Yeah. It spreads. I'm telling you that negativity, this is a good question. Do you think negativity spreads faster than positivity?
Absolutely.
Times 10, right?
You know, and a lot of that is because of how our brains are wired that are a survival mechanism. We're always on the lookout for the danger. And in our comfortable places that we live in today, we don't have the dangers of lions. We don't have the dangers of, you know, saber-toothed tigers. And I know we're all living in different levels and different states of being, if you will, comforts. Some are living more comfortably than others. But if we look at the macro level, and Peter Diamandis has written about this in his book about abundance, we're living in kind of the most abundant time ever. We have more knowledge at our fingertips than people had, like not even people, leaders of the world had 30 or 40 years ago. You know, the idea of air conditioning or heating.
Yes.
It's something I think about and I'm very grateful for. And I even tell my kids, the fact that we have running water is something that we should be grateful for and not take for granted, because there are still places in the world that do not have clean running water.
Right. As we speak. Yep.
So all of this is going to shape your perception, but it's like I tell my kids, when we lost power, we all took cold showers, and I made my kids take a cold shower. And I wouldn't make my kids take a cold shower if I didn't take a cold shower myself, but I made my kids take a cold shower because that helped them to see what it is that they actually have. Once again, kind of it's an exercise of paying attention. It's being mindful and being grateful for what we do have. And in some cases, some have more than others. But I find that when it comes to finances, and maybe we'll talk about this in the next podcast because we're going to get into money. Mm-hmm. How optimism plays into this. Frost Bank did a study that they found that optimists are 7 times more financially healthy than pessimists. And so if you're watching, if you're listening to this and you're pushing back in your own mind, because listen, I've been in your place. I called bullshit on some of this stuff a decade ago in my life. And in a decade ago in my life, I was not in a good place. I was literally in the gap, griping about problems.
Yeah.
I was going through a dark night of the soul. I kind of had hit rock bottom in a lot of different areas of my life. But through an investment of time and energy and reading and resources and being very mindful of what I was paying attention to, it has allowed me to have another perspective while still being very empathetic to those who might be struggling in some of these aspects of just, totally. We'll call it life in general. I look at this very, I don't judge anyone. I try to meet people where they're at, but at the end of the day, their thoughts, which are really informed by their belief systems and structures, that their thoughts then go into influence an emotive state of being that then inspire their actions, which when repeated become their habits. Those are their choices. That's why for me, if I look back, I can't do this alone. Like on my own journey of exponential transformative growth, I've had mentors, peers, coaches, communities that I've been able to work alongside, because otherwise I'm floundering around on this like chaotic sea of life.
See, it's part of who you're paying attention to, who's in your community, who are you surrounding yourself with?
And I think here, as we start to wrap up, what can someone do to become more mindful of what they're paying attention to and how that is going to impact them from their energy? You know, you mentioned the idea of what's going well, as a potential exercise. And that's where, you know, taking time at the end of the day, end of the week, as an individual, as a team, review where you've been winning, what you're excited about, what you've learned, what you're looking forward to. It's a very practical, easy exercise. But I've also seen some push back on this. And then through further conversation, they're kind of a negative individual. And that negativity, like you said, it will spread like wildfire if you're not, back to Jim Rohn, if you're not standing guard at the doorway of your mind.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a quick way to tell, who are the optimists and who are the pessimists on your team, start with this framework, because, and we've experienced this internally, James Robert, this framework and doing this, we realized within months, we had someone on our team who just consistently could not do it. I mean, really like struggled to have good wins, exciting things that they're looking forward to. I mean, every time we met, and then it became kind of obvious to us, wait a minute, this may not be a culture fit. And I'm not saying do this to like try to go find people, but it is an exercise that if you want to see, you know, who these people are, they won't be able to get through this. And actually, let me back up. You might even be able to transform someone's mindset who probably was this way before. And by doing this, who knows? This might be exactly what they need to kind of move them in a different direction.
Very true. And that's the idea of, you know, going back to science. This is neuroplasticity. This is being able to rewire the mind. And I think the point of this is the mind can only hold a positive or negative thought. We get to choose to filter in what we're perceiving or what we're paying attention to. That is a choice. And it's an intentional choice, at least it is for me. That does it mean that I'm like happy, Mr. Positive, go lucky? No, absolutely freaking not. Like I can get in the gap. I can gripe about problems just as much as you can. But I know for me, I don't want to stay there because it's a very dark place to be.
And I thank you for saying that, because that for me, absolutely. Like I can 100% get stuck in the gap and I will feel those negative emotions. I will get, you know, anxiety, but I always know that it's my choice and it's in my head. And yes, is it hard as heck sometimes to get out of it, even though I know, okay, Audrey, like you're in a rut. You're just, you know, your emotions are seeing this differently and you're reacting this way. And does it work immediately? No, but I know deep down that I have a choice and that this is just a moment in time and I've got to do something to flip this around. Well, because I can change it. I have the power to change it.
Well, you know, one last thought here is all of this connects back to, because we're talking about what you're paying attention to, but what you pay attention to, will once again impact how you spend your energy, energy being finite. This gets into Dr. David Hawkins, his map of consciousness. And there are different levels here. And if you think about an emotive state, energy or emotion, I should say, emotion is energy in motion. And that emotive level, based upon what you're paying attention to, is going to either spiral you up or bring you and trap you down. And when we look at Dr. David Hawkins' map of consciousness, there's three levels, but I'm going to simplify it here. So you've got a survival paradigm, and then you've got this growing and thriving paradigm, but all of that is directly connected back to your emotive or energetic state, which in today's conversation comes back to what you're paying attention to. So This has been such a good conversation today, Audrey. As we wrap up, what's that one thing? I know we've already given some perspective, but let's get even more practical. Like, one small thing that someone who is watching or listening can do next to be more mindful of what they're paying attention to.
I would say just maybe start your, maybe end your day, with just a little bit of reflection. And I honestly have done this a lot, like just on a personal sense of like, okay, what did I pay attention to today? Like, what did I watch? What did I read? What did I listen to? And I'm kind of curious and just do like my own little self-assessment just to see, and then see how that impacted your energy that day. And I will tell you, I'll be honest with you, the days that I know that I didn't, and this is not for everybody, and this is also no judgment, but the less I am plugged in, social media, TV, I can tell you, the more energy I have at the end of the day. For me, that's just something personally, I tend to get sucked into that a little bit too much. And so I've been able to kind of see like, what's the relationship between my energy and what I'm paying attention to. I will tell you guys, I removed myself from a lot of like family group chats about politics, because I'm like, okay. And not that I don't think it's important, but I know that it's taking my energy and my attention away from me. So I would just say, take some time, do a little self-assessment. And you know, what works for me may not work for you, but
that's a fantastic way to wrap things up here, because it does come back to just how we started today's conversation with Epictetus. You become what you give your attention to. This has been fun, Audrey. Thanks again for joining me for another episode of the Banking on Digital Growth podcast.
Thank you.
As always, and until next time, be well, do good, be the light.